الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. هل يستوي الذين يعلمون والذين لا يعلمون؟ وقال تعالى: يعلمون ظاهرا من الحياة الدنيا وهم عن الآخرة هم غافلون. صدق الله المولانا العظيم. In the first ayat which I recited, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, those people who know and those who don't know, can they be equal? There is a great difference between those who know and those who don't know. That difference is in many ways. In one way, a person who knows about how to make wudu, and one person who doesn't know how to make wudu, the rest of the ibadat is dependent on wudu. One person who knows the things that break wudu, and a person who doesn't know the things that break wudu. His wudu might be broken, and he doesn't know, and he's making the whole night ibadat. So the people of knowledge and those who don't know. And this is the basics of deen. As far as aqaid also is concerned, if a person hasn't got the proper aqidah, proper belief, and one person who has got proper belief, and that person who hasn't got proper belief, he's made a very big mistake in his aqidah, and he can be making lot of ibadat, but it won't be availing anything whatsoever. And on the other hand, a person who has got proper belief, correct belief, and perhaps he made no amal, perhaps even he made all the gunas, but he dies with correct belief, there will be salvation for him. So knowledge is very, very important, and this is the very basics of knowledge. Then the more a person gets knowledge about namaz, for example, or about wudu, for example, there mustn't be wastage in wudu. A person doesn't know it, and we see very commonly, Allah protect and save us all, person making wudu is making miswak and the water is running. And not only running, but running, he opened the tap quite a bit, perhaps full also. And what it minan, he's making miswak. So there, perhaps he doesn't know, or he's ghaflat, unmindful. Perhaps he knows, but he hasn't applied the knowledge for that time. So that person's wudu, and a person who knows how to make wudu, and he applies it also, he's in dhikr. He's not in ghaflat, he's aware that I'm making wudu, I mustn't waste water. What a difference between the two. And not only their wudu, then their namaz again. There will be so much of concentration in that namaz. And the other, there won't be that concentration in that namaz, etc. So there is great difference. So then in namaz itself, a person who knows and a person who doesn't know. What are the things? For example, a person is not aware, or he knows, but he doesn't apply. When he's making wudu, his elbows, he doesn't include the elbows in the washing. And his ankles, perhaps he doesn't cover the ankles when he's washing. And it's at the heel at the back, perhaps. And many times, many people do it in a hurry, and then the wudu is not correct. In namaz, what are the things, the factors that invalidate, that break our namaz? Also this we see, many a person, perhaps ghaflat also, he has got the knowledge, or perhaps he hasn't got the knowledge, but he stretching his beard now and then, playing with his topi, playing with his beard or something, and if it goes to the extent that it breaks the namaz, and a person is concentrating also, deep concentration, and also we should remember that how much of concentration we got and how much of devotion, so much these other actions will be less. The more a person's, and this is not to judge other people, this is to judge ourselves. The more we are playing with our toes in namaz, moving them like we are playing piano in namaz, moving our toes up and down, there is this sign that this person hasn't got that concentration in his namaz. But we should check it for ourselves. Don't use this to check other people. And the same way, what any other act which is kharij of namaz, like going in ruku, part of namaz, that we have to make that movement. going in sajda, we have to make that movement. Shawafi, make rafi' yadayn, that they have to make that movement. But any action which is not part of namaz, unnecessarily scratching, itching, or even if it, we feel it's necessary. And this itching is also, it's also a very shrewd and deceptive thing. If you, when you feel like, you really feel like, I must scratch here, the way it's itching me. So if you tell yourself in namaz, after namaz, scratch is enjoyable. So now in namaz I can't scratch properly. After namaz I will scratch properly. But you'll see it just goes away. There is no itch left after that. But if we scratch, then we want to scratch more. And this is also so contagious. We notice one person scratches, then the other, it goes on to the next. He also starts scratching. He also starts playing around. So this all has to do with knowledge. And how much our knowledge is, and that knowledge which is hadir, which isn't at the back of our mind, or it isn't just in our kitabs, or just in our bayans. But when we are making namaz, when we are making wudu, we are conscious of this. So those people who have got this knowledge, they are far superior. Their ibadat is far superior. Their akhlaq is far superior. We find so many of our buzurgs who have got this knowledge that if I say this time, it will hurt somebody's feelings. So they don't say it. They keep quiet. And when the appropriate time is, then they say that to the appropriate person in the appropriate environment also. So all these things has to do with knowledge. So those people who have got knowledge are far superior than the people who haven't got knowledge. What is this knowledge? Allah Ta'ala says, on the other hand, يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. They know the things of this dunya. وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. But they are ghafil. They are unmindful. They haven't got the knowledge of akhirah, of what the life in the qabr will be, the day of qiyamah, the day of after that, what and what, all that, they don't have. So really, knowledge is that which has to do with the unseen. That is the real knowledge. That this the whole deen also has to do with that which is unseen. This deen has come to us from Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and over a period of 1400 years it has come to us. And this has been brought to us from Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, the Sahaba radiallahu ta'ala anhum, tabi'een, tabi tabi'een, they all, and from their great, great ulama, great, great awliya, muhaddithin, mufassireen, mujahideen, all the people who made effort for deen, and they took it from their superiors, and they brought it and gave it to their juniors. And this is how deen is being passed on till today also. That it is, na kitabu se, na wa'azu se, na zar se paida. Deen hota hai buzurgo ki nazar se paida. The knowledge of deen we can get from kitabs. Today you can get it from internet. More than enough you can get on the internet. But this is actually from the company of those people who are above us. And how much we stayed in their company. And they got it genuinely from their superiors. That deen is the real deen. Not from the kitabs. A person might excel as far as kitab knowledge is concerned. But he did not get the opportunity to stay in the company who practiced that knowledge. And how they practiced it. And how they observed it. In fact, today we are gone to that level that we give preference to the kitab knowledge or internet knowledge over that of the buzurgs, how their practices were, who were genuine. And we know they died also on iman. That is how we see really a person whose final was so good, and his the whole world is unanimous on his piety and on his righteousness, how they lived Islam. That is the correct way, and that is what we have to try and bring into us. So anyway, this knowledge of this, we normally say, there is dunya's knowledge and deen's knowledge. Whereas really, dunya's knowledge is not knowledge also. Which our ulama, again, if we stay in the company of the pious, we learn from them that this dunya's knowledge is funoon. It is like a trade. It is hunar. How to earn your livelihood. The things which are of this dunya. And real knowledge, knowledge which is real knowledge, is only the one which came from Allah Ta'ala. A person, the being who created the entire world. Like for example, one example we can easily understand, the formation of a child in the mother's womb. A Canadian doctor wrote on how it is formed from scientific what they got and all their knowledge, medical science, etc. And he asked if there's anyone in the world who can throw more light on this, but not from a medical science point of view, from any other point. So a Malaysian doctor wrote to him, and all the ayats of, which refer to how Allah created the child from stage to stage in the mother's womb. He was completely shocked. He said 1400 years ago in the deserts of Arabia, when there wasn't even a university, there wasn't a maktab also, vast majority, you can say all the people, they didn't know how to read or write also. At that time, to describe the formation of a child, and so perfectly, and in fact advanced of scientific research of today. The same doctor, afterwards when he took the ayat in which Allah Ta'ala says Allah created us from Alaq, and then he went deeper into the meaning of Alaq, and he saw that science also did not reach there, where the three meanings of Alaq, which Allah explains to hang, or the different, there are three different meanings that medical science did not reach there also, which Allah had revealed 1400 years ago. And he takes from side to side, and he says, this is nothing but the word of the Creator, the word of God. So that is that knowledge which Allah Ta'ala has given us, which is absolute knowledge. And that is the knowledge which we are trying to acquire. So that knowledge which is so absolute, we must get that correct knowledge, not just the words of it, but the proper meanings of it also. Otherwise, many people, for example, one person, he said that how we understand parda, and this is becoming common amongst us also, many people who are so-called learned people, that you people, Indian people from the subcontinent, you haven't understood the meaning of parda correctly. He says, if the meaning is that the woman must be completely one side, man must be one side, that at social gatherings, weddings, any other social gathering, and there is no mixture of man and woman, there is no fun in it. When they all meet, they laugh, they joke, they talk, etc., then there is fun. And then he read the ayat on top of that also. That Allah Ta'ala says, there is no harm on you that you eat together or you eat separately. So Allah Ta'ala said you can eat all together, whereas this ayat actually means that all the Anbiya alayhimus salatu was salam, the awliya were always very hospitable and generous. And they wouldn't eat alone on their own. They would make sure that they get a guest also to eat. So this ayat was referring. So you have the zahiri knowledge, but if you don't have the real knowledge, you can make grave errors in these matters. Many other things also. So this knowledge of deen is that which comes from Allah Ta'ala. And our knowledge of deen, Islam, Allah Himself protected it completely. وَإِنَّا لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ Allah says, we are the protectors of this knowledge. And today we see, for example, last week, an 8-year-old boy became Hafiz of Quran. Many others, even younger they become. How many others and what hafizahs are produced? So how Allah has protected them. The meaning of the Quran, Allah has protected it also by the actual actions and the amal of the great ulama. That the meaning of the Quran, by knowledge also and by the practice also, how they have preserved this knowledge. Knowledge of hadith, or knowledge of tafsir, all this will, and Allah has taken the promise till the day close to Qiyamah, when there will be no Muslims left, till then there will be always a group, Allah Ta'ala says, who will be firm on this knowledge. Also from this other knowledge which is of what we call this dunya, and they themselves admit it, for example, and this is all for us to accept, mostly we are students who are here, so we have to accept this knowledge, understand how authentic, how true, how absolute this knowledge is. So theories which they call, like for example, Darwin's theory of evolution, that is called knowledge also, and you do your PhD, you get a PhD, a doctorate in it, that mankind, they were originally monkeys, and then they became human beings. The whole process went through in a process. Our Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali gives so beautiful answer to this, that in the history of the monkeys, if one monkey could become a human being, then till today, why didn't the second monkey also become a human being? Like there are many families, mashallah, that the whole family, husband, wife, children, 3, 4, 5, 6, all are Hafiz al-Quran. One could become, another one could become also. And there is a family in Makkah Sharif, they, the whole family and the progeny from the top, they all memorize Riyadus Salihin. And the children also, they are teaching them. I met them in Perth in Australia, though they have migrated there, but there they are carrying on. So the one, the father could become Hafiz of Riyadus Salihin, the mother could become, the children are becoming, though they are there in a country like Australia. So these, so why didn't another monkey become a human being till today? And Hazrat Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali says that somebody told him that refute the theory of Darwin's theory. I was such a great man. Somebody told Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali, you should have studied law. Because you, the how you can fit in things and your brain and intelligence which Allah had given you, you will break any case down. He said, I've studied the greatest law, the law of Allah Ta'ala. So they told Maulana Thanvi, refute the Darwin's theory of evolution. He said, there is no need for that. He said, other people are becoming, going out of the fold of Islam, believing wrongly. That Allah didn't create us, but that we have come from monkeys. So Hazrat said that everyone has the right to claim his lineage. Everyone, I say my father is Ibrahim, his father was Sulaiman, his father was Ahmad, so forth we say. Everyone say, somebody says, I'm from Indonesia, I'm from Malaysia, I'm from India, I'm from Gujarat, I'm from this Gam. Everyone, I'm a Sayyid. I'm a Mughal, whatever, everyone is proud. So if they are so proud and determined to admit that their father is a monkey, grandfather, great-grandfather, then let it be. We claim that Allah created us. Allah Ta'ala has said it so many places. So this is that absolute knowledge which we are gaining. And they themselves say it's a theory. They don't even say it's absolute. And how long it's a theory? A theory remains for a while, scientifically it is proven correct, it is proven wrong. Then it's finished. And how many other things? For example, the Big Bang theory, also a theory, that this world came into existence with one Big Bang. Whereas clearly Allah Ta'ala says He is the creator of it. And He created this whole world. And also this glass here, if I have to drop it, here on the carpet, it's possible it will break also. On tile, cement, if you drop it, definitely it's going to break. But, and it will be a small bang, not a big bang. But with such a big bang, and everything fell in place so perfectly. Whether it's a Chinese man, whether it's an African man, whether it's an Indian, whether it's a European, everyone with two eyes, one nose, two nostrils. Nobody with three nostrils, nobody with one nostril, and one mouth, two ears, everyone. So who is the, there is one maker, He made everyone. And what a great maker and creator Allah Ta'ala is. All of us sitting here, everyone, we got the same identical eyes, nose, but everyone is different. Two brothers, how they are so different from one another. And no two persons from Adam alayhi salam till the day of Qiyamah will be completely same. The fingerprints won't be the same. The eyes won't be the same. The voice won't be the same. The way of walking won't be the same. Who is this? It is Allah Ta'ala. So anyway, Allah Ta'ala has given us that absolute knowledge of Allah Ta'ala. That is what we are gaining here, that Allah is our creator and we believe in Allah Ta'ala. Similarly, for example, when we were small, that may be about 50, 60 years ago, it was common knowledge that aspirin is very good. Headache, stomach ache, little fever, take an aspirin, you'll become right. And it was so common that a person selling on the pavement some things, he will have aspirin and aspirin also there. Not only in a chemist or not only in a grocery shop, but even the person on the pavement used to sell it. Then there was new theories, there were new research made that it's very harmful for the body. And the governments of the world banned aspirin and aspirin, that it's very harmful for the body. Then we saw that phase again, that it's very beneficial. It keeps your blood thin. So you must take aspirin, Ecotrin, aspirin, you must take one a day. It keeps your blood thin. So these things which change all the time, that is not absolute. And this is after great research is made. And after great scientists and in all fields, whatever they say, then they make these statements. There are many other things like that. Whereas our deen is that absolute deen, that Allah Ta'ala made music haram, and it is haram forever. Now whether we bring it in the back of the Quran Sharif reading, it is still haram. Whether we bring it with some nazams and qasidas, etc., nasheeds, etc., it is haram. That absolute knowledge of Allah, that is completely. Now the children of that music has come in different forms now. Whether it is the ringtone on the phone, and then a person is listening to it every now and then, the phone rings. And if it's a musical tone, it has an effect on the heart. That this music is a stepping stone towards zina, adultery. And therefore today, man, it's a common melody that everyone says, my thoughts are just becoming terrible. To have pure thoughts has become sort of, it's not common, it's not available. That's what we are listening all the time. So it has gone into so many other things. Similarly, the Quran, the hadith is so clear. Almost every hadith kitab has got a chapter that photos are haram. And the terrible punishments for making photos and the confusion or the dispute is lying how to make photos. But that is not the point. The point is the photo itself which is haram. And the photo which is haram and the children, the illegitimate children of this which has come into films, into videos, into all other things, all those things consequently are also haram. So this will not change. It will remain the same, and that will remain till the day of Qiyamah. Now, the whole world, even the vast majority of the ummah can say it is jais. But what Allah has made haram, and the strict warnings Allah has sounded for it, that will remain as it is. Till the day of Qiyamah it will remain. And Allah will always keep a group of people who will stick to the truth. And that is that absolute knowledge which Allah has given. And with this conviction we must acquire this knowledge. The same way with interest. Allah has made interest haram. Now we can give it other names, different names also. And we can put it down on paper also as different things. But what Allah has made haram will remain haram. And also we should remember a very important point, that what is haram and a person accepts it as haram, if falls into it and he admits my weakness, I'm doing wrong, that person, there is hope that he will make tawbah. And with tawbah there is great hope, in fact guaranteed Allah will make maaf also. But a person who takes the wrong to be right, as Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith Maulana Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Ali writes, in his time, he said, people are trying to make interest halal. In his time, when Hazrat wrote, maybe 50, 60 years ago, and today we know what is the situation, with just different names, how it is being fostered and how it is being made, that interest in its various forms is halal. So Hazrat says that when the time comes when we take medicine to be poison, and we take poison to be medicine, what hope is there for the ill person to survive? When we're taking the wrong things to be our medicine, things which are harmful, a person looks at a beautiful snake, the color, the patterns on it, and he wants to embrace it and sleep with it at night, what will happen to that person? So in the same way, we have to understand this deen which Allah had given. وَمَنْ يَبْتَغِي غَيْرَ الْإِسْلَامِ دِينَ. A person who will seek any other way of Islam besides as deen, and he had deen as a way of life, will seek any other way besides Islam, it won't be accepted from him. And which was this deen? Which was this deen Allah is referring to? That deen which Allah had revealed to Nabi Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And that deen which has come to us, and here again, not which has come to us from in kitab form, but which has come, and Allah said he will keep the system alive with those people who will practice this deen, and they will bring it to us. In that form, that deen which is a living way of life, where the Quran or hadith has said that deen is ilm. And so see from who you take your ilm. So that is also that those where it is said, see from who you take it, Those people who are practicing on that. How much a person has stayed in the company of such people. He has been fortunate to stay in their company, so much that understanding of deen will come into him. And so much he will appreciate it. A person who has, deen has come to him only from kitabs, only from his studies and his research, and he did not get an opportunity or sufficient opportunity to stay with such people. That person, he will have deen, but it will be what he has understood. From how much the great ulama, they have disputes on a certain words, that is this the meaning, somebody proves it this way, somebody proves it another way, and this carries on all the time. A person writes a certain kitab about a certain masala, another person of equal, higher, lower standing refutes it with his dalils again, what he is again. And to explain this, for example, one example comes to mind. After namaz, to make dua, whether this is established or not. Amongst our ulama also, there was a difference of opinion. One great mufti of Pakistan, he was of the opinion that there shouldn't be dua. Like the Arabs, normally they don't make dua. And he was of that opinion. Another great mufti of Lahore, he was of the opinion dua has to be made. This is, the dua has to be made. So this controversy carried quite a bit along with the ulama. So they say, let us settle it, both our ulama, Deobandi ulama, let us have a meeting, a discussion, and both put their proofs forward, and then they decide. So when they came to sit, so this alim who was of the view that you should make dua, he said that it's possible in our academic discussion. He presents proofs more stronger. And he overpowers me. And then I will the conclusion of a debate is the one who presents his case better, like a court case, then he wins the case, so then I will have to follow. But he says, what I saw my elders doing my whole life, and who elders he mentioned. So I'm not prepared to debate, because if he overpowers me in his academic discussion and proofs, then I will have to accept. But I can't refuse what I saw with my eyes and what I grew up with my elders. This alim said, then it is possible that those great pious people you're speaking about, in my presentation of my proofs, I may say a word which is disrespectful to them, and that will be extremely detrimental and harmful for my deen and for my akhirah. Therefore, I also refuse to sit in this debate. So this is that deen, that what we saw our elders doing, and our conviction is that they were righteous people. Their knowledge was absolute. They did not err in their knowledge. Their knowledge was absolute. And any person who bases all these things on the elders' words, that person is very, very fortunate. How many of our great ulama, when they see other younger ulama, they also base their whatever rulings there are, they base them on their seniors' teachings. And they make those their basis. They have great trust on those. And those ulama that only work on proof or from kitabs, there is a great possibility we have misunderstood, we haven't understood. So this ilm that we are acquiring is that absolute knowledge which Allah Ta'ala has given us, in which nothing has changed. And it is that knowledge which Allah has declared the protector of this. As somebody has said very beautifully, it is not the Hafiz of Quran that protects the Quran, it is Allah who is protecting that Hafiz. And Allah has given him the honor that Allah is using him to protect the validity and the correctness of the Quran. Allah Ta'ala is using him. So, and also we will see that how our ulama, they sacrificed for this. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh, Allahu Akbar. We can't even bring it on our tongues. We can't think what tortures he was put through with regard to whether the Quran Sharif is the makhluk creation of Allah or whether it is a sifat of Allah Ta'ala. At that time, how many big ulama also faltered or they chose the path of at that time it is permissible for your life to protect your life, you can, but there were only Ahmad ibn Hanbal and one or two other ulama that in view of the strong opposition from the ruling king at the time, they remained firm, and what tortures they had to go through. So Allah will always protect his deen, and this will be protected till the day of Qiyamah. And these people are those people, لا يخافون لومة لائم. People can hurl whatever abuses they want to at them, they feel happy about it. Hey, somebody says that this man doesn't belong in this century, the 21st century or 15th century Hijri. He belongs in the old ages. And they feel happy that we belong in the old ages, the time of Nabi Ali Salatu Wasalam. We are happy that you gave us this title. We are not worthy of it, but you gave us the title that we belong to Khairul Qurun. And they don't feel hurt about it at all. So may Allah Ta'ala bless us with this true knowledge, complete yaqeen and conviction, and make shukr to Allah that we are acquiring this knowledge.